Welcome. Welcome, family. I'm Father Mitch Pacwa, here for EWTN Live. And it's great to be here and to have all of you out here in our live audience as well as at home. Thank you for watching. Today is a kind of a nice feast for us Jesuits. It's the feast of St. Denis. Now, not that we were around. He lived in the middle of the 3rd century, so we weren't around yet. We're the last of the orders of the church. But our founders took their first vows at the church of St. Denis, so it's always been a nice thing. And it's good to remember some of these martyrs who were the founders of churches. St. Denis was the bishop of Paris in the 3rd century, the 200s AD. And to know that that church was founded on the blood of martyrs, like so many other churches, should give us encouragement as we hear about the martyrdom of so many Christians, the poor Christians in Pakistan that were martyred, and also in Sudan and other places, so that not only do we pray for them, but also we look to them as being great heroes for us as the martyrs of the past were. So we'll celebrate this great feast. And today, being Wednesday in EWTN Live, we have a guest. And our guest today is a fine Dominican priest, Father Emmerich Vogt, who's here with us from Portland, Oregon. So please welcome him.
Thank you.
Good to have you, Father Emmerich.
Good to be here.
Father Emmerich and I go way back. When I was teaching once a month in Portland, Oregon, I had the privilege of going over to your parish, Holy Rosary Parish in Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. Your pastor there as well, Superior.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Ah, God bless you. That's a great parish. If you're ever in Portland, a great parish to go. It's close to downtown, and it's a very, very pretty church. What, you had renovated it once?
We did.
There was a fire?
We had our 100th birthday, and so we renovated it to put in stained glass windows for the first time. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of the renovation, there was a little accident with an electrician and a live wire that set it on fire, so we almost lost it. But anyway, we ended up winning because we got a new organ out of it that we would not have had otherwise.
You know, we have that kind of renovation experience in Chicago, too, every so often. Well, not always legal, but this was just an accident. Well, what do you want to talk about today?
What interests me is, you know, helping people to deal with problems in their life and real issues that come up that make them miserable. Because if it's true that Jesus says, you're going to have trouble in life,
yep,
but don't be afraid, I've overcome the trouble, my peace I give you. So that implies that peace is not the absence of trouble, but a lot of people think it is.
Yeah, that's true.
If I didn't have trouble, then I could be at peace. Whereas Jesus says, you're going to have trouble, but I offer you peace. My peace I give you, not as the world gives. So we need help seeing how to apply that in our life, how to win that peace, yet we have trouble.
Yeah, so that the troubles of life are going to come to us. And we see that in our country. We see that in our own personal lives. And
that's one of the biggest scandals is suffering, you know. Mm-hmm. I grew up with a very devout atheist father. And I say devout in the sense that it's not that he just didn't care, but he belonged to Free Thinkers of America. Mm-hmm. We received their publication every month called The Age of Reason. Mm-hmm. And the big problem that he pointed out to us as children was suffering. So I remember one time as a child, a little girl was in a car accident, killed in a car accident. My father said, God is love. God is love. So that scandal, you know, Scripture says that suffering is a stumbling block to the Jew, a scandal to the Gentile, meaning everybody. Mm-hmm. Scripture's way of saying everybody. It's all you have are Jews and Gentiles, and everybody's got a problem with suffering.
Yeah, that's true. And it's as a matter of fact, it's suffering is not necessarily to be suffering. It's not something that we endure, or look forward to.
Right.
You know, so the sisters up in Hansville. I've often had you come to give retreats, and so have the sisters of Mother Teresa.
Right.
In talking to these sisters, how do you present this issue of how we deal with this issue of suffering? What's sort of the take that you'd like to have?
Well, the first thing I tell people is, because I've thought about it a lot growing up with my father in this mm-hmm. issue, and so I thought about it a lot, and yet when my father was dying of cancer, he was in his 70s, and I had assumed unconsciously that when it was time for him to die, that he would say, well, this machine here is the result of irrational evolutionary forces that gave birth to this. Now it's dying from cancer, so it's my turn to go. He didn't want to die. And that shocked me. Dad, do you want happiness for six more months? Yeah, I'll take six. I'll take a year. I'll take 2 years. So I can see that this man was pre-programmed for paradise. Despite his beliefs, all his human urges were for eternal happiness.
Yep.
So the problem of suffering, then. How do you explain suffering? So I thought about it a lot in reading and then entering the seminary and studying. And I realized, well, there's suffering because of sin. If man had never sinned, there'd never be suffering. But since man sinned, there's suffering. All the evil that happens in the world is a result of our disobedience to God. Well, then what should God do? We disobeyed, we fell, and there's sin. Cain kills Abel, the evil spreads on the earth. Shouldn't God take away the suffering? Send Christ and take away suffering. No more suffering. But you still have sin. And that's the problem. So, if you were to say that only people who go to church will never get cancer, only people who go to church ever win the lottery, well, then people are going to go to church. But the, you know, the experience or the life of a laboratory rat is not what God wants for his people. So if you say you follow God, you go to church, no suffering, well, then people go to church not because they love God. So another thing is to realize is that when people, like God says to St. Catherine of Siena, doctor of the church back in the 14th century, looking at all the horrible things that people do, all the terrible evil, and God says to St. Catherine in the dialogues, imagine, daughter, what they wouldn't do if they found perfect pleasure in this world. And I can prove that by looking at America. And when I was a child, and you were a child, we're around the same age.
Right.
We didn't lock our doors. Drove up to the store. You left the car with the keys in it. Went in the store. Every day you did not pick up the newspaper like we do now. And there's a new murder. Somebody has killed people. Some sniper has come. Some girl is missing. Constant in our culture now.
Yeah.
It's become a culture of death. It wasn't like that when we were little.
That's right. No, I grew up in the city. You know, I didn't live in the suburbs or the country. We lived in the city of Chicago. And we didn't lock our doors until we went to bed at night.
Right.
And even then, I said, this is terrible. What's the city coming to? You got to lock it at night.
Right.
Now.
And the parents of one of our priests lives in Los Angeles. They say, Father, my husband and I used to be able to take a walk every night outside in the neighborhood in dark. They don't dare go out now. Yeah. So America becomes richer and becomes more evil. Mm-hmm. And this is the message of the Old Testament. God chose slaves. He brought them out, formed them to be his people. And they grow into a wonderful nation, but then they forget God.
Is it the wealth itself that makes people evil?
I think people begin to trust in the wealth.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why you have people like Mother Teresa, does not want to have income. St. Clair did not want to have income. St. Francis didn't want to, because we've become dependent on the income and not on God.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a problem. And so like when you have the stock market crash in 1929, people commit suicide, not poor people. And so now suicide is the chief killer of young people in our culture. Now, you would think that it would be children in Tijuana or Calcutta that are committing suicide, not American children that have everything.
And people who are very poor would seem to have nothing to live for.
Yeah, they didn't know there was a stock market that crashed. They didn't know what a stock market was.
Yeah, yeah.
But we got too dependent on that. And so imagine, daughter, the Lord says to St. Catherine, what they wouldn't do if they found perfect pleasure in the world. So because there's sin in the world, God's not going to take away the suffering. But Christ came to give us the power to redeem the suffering. The power to overcome the suffering. So I always like to point out to people that the saints are just like us, married to the same people, the same troubled children, the same background. You know, St. Augustine had a problem with lust since the age of 15, illegitimate son, age of 17, went on like this till his conversion, and then became holy. His mother had a drinking problem, as he mentions to us in his confessions. Yet, through grace, she overcame her drinking problem. So we have saints with the same problems. St. Rita had four alcoholic sons. Same problems we have. But the difference is, says the book of Revelation, is these are the people who have come out of the Great Tribulation. What is Great Tribulation? Life in this Valley of Tears. And the alcohol, the lust, St. Bartholomew Long was ordained a Satanist priest.
Sure.
Became very depressed, very suicidal, met some wonderful Catholics, converted, and is a saint. He's also a lawyer. To me, which is another proof of God's existence, that you have lawyers who are saints.
Hey, watch it.
So there's saints from all backgrounds, every occupation. You know, St. Bartolomeo Capitani, who had to lead her drunken, abusive father home from the tavern several times a week. St. Fabiola was a very strong-willed woman, She left her husband, married her boyfriend, and then repented years later, came back to the church, did public penance, and she's a saint, Saint Fabiola. So there's no problem, no difficulty, no background that we could have that the saints didn't have. But once they made a decision to turn their will and their life over to the care of God, they overcame everything. So Jesus came to give us that power.
Yeah.
And I think we see that power in traditional Christian culture.
Yeah.
So you see, where are women freer in Christian culture? Where do poor children have an education for free in Christian children, in Christian countries? Or, like Mother Teresa's sisters in Calcutta, go to the street. They'll get the children who live in the street with their parents, they're too poor to go to school, and they educate them so that they can grow up reading and writing and get a job.
No.
So our culture is a life-giving culture, and we've triumphed over the suffering. One time I had a class in Anchorage, Alaska. I taught calligraphy to the parish, and there were two girls who came, were Zoroastrian Persians.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought, living in America, they thought it was so wonderful that crippled people in a wheelchair could go downtown, get on the subway system, they can get on the bus, they can go down the streets, and we made it accessible for them. And so they thought this was a wonderful thing. So to have a life-giving culture, you know, not to take away the suffering, but to give us the power to overcome the suffering. And that's what we've done in our culture.
Now, some of the things that I know the sisters have appreciated in your talks to them is dealing with some of the concrete steps for how you start to deal with the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And even the attitude that you have as you start to approach suffering. Why don't you talk about some of that?
Well, one time in our parish in San Francisco, I met this wonderful woman who was a good Catholic. She knew her Catholic faith inside out, went to good Catholic school, but she had something special that most people don't have. And I would indicate it as wisdom. She was so wonderfully wise that I loved it.
Yeah.
And I appreciated her honesty. She was radically honest, mm-hmm. even to me. Mm-hmm. I came to her one time haranguing about some harangable people. And she said, "Father, where's all this resentment coming from?" I thought, "Resentment? What's that?" You know, I was shocked that she would point out that I have a little problem here.
Yeah.
And so so I appreciated it, although it made me squirm.
Yeah.
But I appreciate her honesty in pointing it out. And that, to me, that's what a real friend can do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was wise because she was an alcoholic. And she had to deal and struggle with her addiction and learn the steps to take to overcome that addiction. And she was very wise because of that problem she had to deal with. So she suggested I might study the 12 steps of AA. Why don't you study those and you'd grow in wisdom and stuff. And I thought, well, there's nothing wrong with me. But anyway, so I did study them and met people who knew them and talked to them and listened to their experiences. And it was so wonderful that I loved the wisdom of it all.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I would hear as a principle, a spiritual principle, they'd say that anytime you're miserable, anytime I'm miserable, no matter what the cause out there, there's something going on in here. And I know that to be the truth because Jesus says, you're going to have trouble, but my peace is my farewell gift to you. He rises from the dead, peace is my farewell gift to you. Not as the world gives, but most of us, because we're insecure from the womb, because of original sin, are looking for the source of our peace in the world. And it doesn't work. And so we're angry, we're bitter, we're jealous, and so forth, the seven deadly sins. So anytime we're miserable, no matter what the cause, something's going on here. And the classic example they give in AA literature, a woman talks about not being able to understand that principle in her life. She was a recovering alcoholic. But she says, then one night she was reading into the wee hours of the night, and her dogs started barking outside, and her neighbors frown on this, and so she's angry that it's happening. She's afraid of her neighbor's reaction and full of shame. So she went down and called him in. Then a few weeks later, she said the same thing happened, only this time she realized dogs bark. It's a broken, sinful world. If it were a perfect world, dogs wouldn't bark after six. But it's not a perfect world. Dogs bark. So she went down and called him in. Come on, come on. They stopped barking. She didn't have any anger, any fear, any shame. And she says, what's the difference? She says, she realized that when my spiritual condition is positive, I react positively. And I can see that with Mother Teresa. See a man yelling at Mother Teresa, some man all upset about yelling at her. Mother Teresa listens, lets him yell and shout, and she sees what she can do. There was a book written against Mother Teresa, you know, a terrible book. It was all over the world, and I was so angry and upset. And they didn't know, should they tell Mother Teresa about it? Should they not tell her about it? They finally decided to tell her, Mother, there's this book, there's this article about it in the paper. Bring me the article, she said. And she read the article, and she said, we've accepted all the good things, we have to accept this too. So it didn't ruin her day. Mm-hmm. We have a bad hair day, we're upset.
The older we get, the less that's a problem.
Why are you looking at me?
No. Oh, no. What, are you feeling defensive?
So I love that. Anytime we're miserable, no matter what the cause, there's something going on in here. So I can help the people in the parish as well as myself. When I find out that I'm miserable, I try to find out what's going on here. One time, I was getting so angry at a parish I was at, and I was angry because at this particular parish, the man who was the custodian happened to live in the parish hall. And it's an old hall, and it's cold and damp, and he has to eat there with these small little burners. So I said to the superior, you know, can he eat in the priest's kitchen when the priests are finished? He said, sure. So I told him he could eat there. Well, he leaves this big mess. And now I'm angry because I got to put away this big mess. But I stop to think now, when I'm miserable, I try to find out which one of my faults is at work here. And I have a fault of trying to please people, and therefore I don't like to confront people. And I need to go confront him in a reasonable, responsible, and loving way and say, you know, you left this stuff there and it needs to be put away. He said, okay, Father. He never did it again. So it was easy. But in the past, in my blindness and ignorance, I would put it away and I'd be angry about it. But I'd never show my anger because I'm a nice person.
Uh-huh.
So that principle helped me understand my own misery
and
other things in my life. One time I was angry because I had all my work to do. Now the computer in the parish office isn't working. Who's the only priest who knows how to fix the computer?
Yeah.
Line 2 isn't working on the phone system. Who's the only who fixed it last time? And you know, so I'm angry that I got all my work to do. What are these other priests doing and stuff? But before I explode, I stop to think because I know that I'm so miserable now that one of my faults is at work here. And growing up in an alcoholic family with a lot of addiction and insecurity, I often confuse being needed with being loved. So I subconsciously sabotage myself by making myself needed. I fix the computer, I fix line 2, I make the booklets for Rosary Sun. I do all this stuff. So I've consciously done it, or subconsciously made myself needed. And so I've got to wean myself from my attachment to this in order to find peace. So I can take the booklet out and say, here's the phone booklet, page 10, that's how I learned to fix line 2. I'll see you later. So these are simple principles, but for often for people, especially people from dysfunctional families and stuff, they somehow overlook these simple principles, and they need to hear them. And you learn them from people who've been there. That's why it's important to read the saints, because they've suffered, they've had problems, they've had insecurities, and they found the way out.
And so what you're also trying to point out here to us is that it's not a good idea for us to focus just on the external situation and say, that's my problem. If I just get rid of all these problems, I wouldn't have any problems.
Right.
But rather to look inside and say, why does this aggravate me? Yes, this is the phone doesn't work. The computer is broken. But the reaction I have is the problem.
Why have I lost the peace of Christ? Why am I miserable now because the world isn't going my way? So, because Jesus is serious, he says, my peace I give you, not as the world gives. And I want that peace. Mm-hmm. Well, if I want that peace, I've got to die. I've got to be crucified to the world and the world to me. I've got to be crucified personally from my need to be liked and to be needed. I've got to be crucified to not wanting to confront people. I've got to confront people in a reasonable, responsible, and loving way. And if I don't do it in a reasonable, responsible, and loving way, then I've got to make amends for it. So, St. Teresa of Avila, when she talks about the spiritual life, you want to grow spiritually, then you've got to start by bringing your will into conformity with the divine will. So, here you're talking about my interior life, my life with God, and she's talking about your life with people out there. If I want to grow in here and deepen my spiritual life, then I've got to bring my will, as I live my daily life, into conformity with His will. So, one time at the parish, I was going to give a lecture, and there was a... And I went and made sure the doors were open, and they were open. I made sure they were open. This is a big bugaboo in the parish. You got to have the, so I had the doors open. They were already open. Then I come in, I talk to this man, and I say, hi, Fred, how are you? And we had a nice talk and stuff like that. Then I went and set up the microphone and stuff. And this elderly couple comes in and said, well, the doors were locked. The doors weren't locked. I checked them, you know. And oh, I mean, I could be happy if only the world would be the way it's supposed to be.
Stop that wine, or I'll give you something to whine about. Oh, no, wait, that's old.
So we have this little argument here, and I'm right. And one person said to me one time, well, do you want to be right, Father? Do you want to be happy? I said, can I be both? But anyway, I thought about it afterwards, and I was angry and upset because I made sure it was open, and I don't like to be wrong. So I thought about it, and I said, well, I talked to Fred, and Fred runs our RCIA program, and he didn't know I was giving a lecture, and his responsibility to lock up the hall. And he left, and I'm sure he locked those doors, and I was wrong. So if we want to deepen our spiritual life, then step 10 in the 12 steps is, when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. Or the way Scripture says it, don't let the sun go down on your anger.
Yep.
So I had to find that couple. It took me a couple of weeks till I saw them after Mass and stuff, and I went and I had to eat humble pie. And St. Teresa of Avila says the primary virtue that must be practiced by those who pray is humility. It's the primary virtue, not love, she says, because people who are arrogant and self-centered can't be loving. So, and in the 12 steps, they put great emphasis on humility. Step 6 and 7 is all about humility.
What are these six and 7 steps?
Sixth step is, now that you'd ask me this, seventh step is humbly asking God to remove my defects. So the sixth step is become willing to have God remove. I have to be willing for God to remove my defects, my need to be liked, my need to be right, and so forth, if I want to grow. I've got to be willing for God to remove these. Now, that's not so easy. It sounds good because your problems are the source of your misery. Why wouldn't I want to get rid of them? Well, for the person who's the more doormat personality to have to go confront some powerful figure, that's very scary. And so that person's got to be willing to die to their fear, and fear is the chief activator of our faults. Fear is the chief activator of our faults. St. Teresa of Avila says, unless we're willing to detach from all that the self holds worthwhile, being right, not confronting anybody, etc., unless we're willing to die to these things, our lives are going to be ruled by fear. And fear is the chief activator of our faults. So I have to be able to deal and confront my fears. It's all right to be afraid, admit I'm afraid, but we don't want to allow our emotions to speak for us.
And there's an important little distinction that you've made there that I like very much, that it's not that fear is the fault.
Right.
It's fear which activates the faults that we have.
Right. And if I allow fear to make my decisions for me, then I get all angry and upset because something happened, because I'm unwilling to face my fears. Mm-hmm. So that sixth step about being ready to have God remove my defects, they teach, is in direct proportion to my humility. So then I've got to really work on humility in order to have God remove my defects. And so anytime I can submit myself to being humbled, like going and apologizing to this couple because I was wrong, I insisted I was right, and they were right, then it's humbling. It hurts because I'm arrogant and self-centered and I want to be right. And for me, the pastor, to look wrong, that's terrible. So, but you find out it's not terrible. The saints are not people who didn't make any mistakes, but they made mistakes, then they learn from their mistakes. And if we do anything wrong, we have to make amends. And so step 8 and 9 are about making amends, which is part of our Catholic faith. A lot of people go to confession and they forget that they have to make a firm purpose to amend their life. If they want to be forgiven, they have to make a firm purpose to amend their life, to change. Making amends doesn't mean saying, I'm sorry. You can go to work and you're late for work and you apologize to your boss, oh, I'm sorry I was late, my car wasn't working. Next day, I'm sorry my alarm clock didn't go off, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. Changing your behavior is making an amend. And so going to confession, I have to make a firm purpose to change if I wanted God to forgive me in the grace of the sacrament. So that's another spiritual principle that's stressed in those 12 steps.
Yeah. And this is something that I think we fear so much. Again, using fear is something that triggers our faults. Our culture has a certain fear of being judged, of being wrong, of being told that what we're doing is immoral. And this is part of the catechism that you see on a lot of television shows. I've been very critical of that myself, that a lot of times they say, well, you don't want anybody to feel bad about themselves.
Right.
Whereas, you know, you don't have to be afraid to be humbled.
Right. To accept your weakness. And humility is like in the life of a little flower. It's accepting your nothingness and being happy about it. Not, oh, I'm no good, I can't do anything. That's pride. That's the opposite coin of pride.
Yeah.
But to be humble, to accept your nothingness, and to be happy about it. Somebody's taller than you, somebody's richer, somebody's liked more. So, what's that got to do with my peace and happiness, which comes from Christ? There's a wonderful saying from Bishop Sheen, is that God does not love us because we're lovable. Our lovableness exists on account of His character, not account of our character. And so to want our lovableness to come from our own power is a desire that belongs only to God. Our lovableness becomes from God. And so the self-righteous person is trying to acquire their own righteousness, and it's an illusion. So to accept my nothingness, I'm shorter than you, I'm not as smart as you, and so forth. Then this one, and you're at home with yourself, that's humility. And you're free then. But that comes from dying. We're so deeply insecure from the womb. I believe that Our Lady from the womb was secure. Knowing, one time I went to an orphanage in Mexico, and the poor sisters have all these babies to take care of, and they can't hold each baby and feed it. They've got to line them all up, and then they line them all up to sleep. And well, I heard this baby crying, whimpering. So I went over, and I picked up this little baby, and I held this baby. Oh, he fell asleep. Well, that was fast, so I put him back, and whimper. He didn't fall asleep. He was asleep. He was already asleep, but he was whimpering. As soon as he was touched, he felt he was calm. He started whimpering. He was asleep, though. And I'm sure he knows that he's been abandoned by his mother already. And he's already insecure on a certain level, not on a conscious intellectual level, but on a certain level. And I think we're all like that to a certain extent from the womb. Whereas Our Lady knew that she was lovable, not through anything she did, from the womb, as the Immaculate Conception.
Yeah.
And so we spend our lives struggling to try to acquire our own lovableness, which is really self-righteous behavior. It comes from Christ, and that's what the saints know.
Yeah.
And they surrender to His power, they're crucified to the world, overcome their need to be right, their need to be liked, their need to whatever, and then they find true peace, which Christ wants us to have. But it comes from the cross, from the suffering, if we embrace it. You run away from it, like the drug addict, it's got problems, can't bear with it, takes drugs. He's looking for happiness, but looking in the wrong place. He's running away from the problem instead of confronting the problem, and then have peace with problems. The saints know so much grace that comes to them from the problem that they'll go to the problem. St. Catherine, see trouble over here? I'll go over there, right in the midst of it. She knows the grace that comes to her soul through the trouble. They're not going to run away from it.
One of the other things, too, that has helped me to understand some elements of the virtue of humility versus pride is that when I am comparing myself to other people, I'm trying to look down on them.
Mm-hmm.
And the stance of looking down at other people means I cannot be looking up at God.
Mm-hmm.
And that conversion, that turning around that conversion is about, is to stop trying to, or stop actually looking down on others, but keep my focus on God.
Mm-hmm.
And that my humility will then realize how big He is.
Right.
And how great He is.
Yeah.
And how much He's the focus. And I don't need to be the focus. And I don't need to look down on other people.
Right.
For me to be good, people don't have to be below me.
Right.
For me to be good, I have to be looking up to one who's greater than I.
And somebody told me one time that don't tell God how big your problems are. Tell your problems how big God is.
That's a good way to put it. That's nice. See, I like that. That's a good one. All right, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break now. And we're going to come back in just a couple of minutes. And when we do, we'd like you to be able to ask some of your questions, our audience here in the studio to ask some of their questions or comments. So please stay with us as we continue our conversation with Father Emmerich Vogt. Thank you.
Each week, grab your coffee cup and be our guest down at the Life on the Rock Coffee House. Jeff Cavins is your host for this delightful hour of moving testimony and music. if it matters to young Catholics. It's on the menu at Life on the Rock. See it here live on EWTN.
This is an EWTN Newslink. I'm Michael Hidalgo Grimes. Diplomats at the United Nations said Tuesday the Vatican and the United States are in alliance against a cloning treaty proposed by France and Germany. The Vatican is backing the U.S. position that supports a treaty to ban all forms of human cloning. The French and German proposal would ban only cloning to create babies, but would leave the issue of so-called therapeutic or experimental cloning for future consideration. The Vatican is a permanent observer at the UN, meaning it can debate issues but cannot vote. And October 16th is the 24th anniversary of Pope John Paul II's election to the papacy. And on that day, young Catholics in 15 cities around the world will start a series of Pope Days. Celebrations will include votive mass for the Pope, presentations on the life and thought of Pope John Paul, and distribution of the Pope's writings. New York, Washington, and Denver are among the cities where the Pope Day activities are planned. More news later on EWTN.
Each month, EWTN highlights one of the original series that's available on home video. In honor of October being the month of Our Lady of the Rosary, this month, EWTN's special home video offer is Mysteries of the Rosary. Father Jacques Daly is your guide through the 15 mysteries of this powerful contemplative prayer. To order your copy, call the EWTN Religious Catalog at 1-800-854-6316 or log on to www.ewtn.com/catalog.
EWTN Live, and we've got Father Emmerich Bogt with us. But before we go to some of your questions, I'd like just to refer you to a review, a magazine that he helps edit. It's called the 12-Step Review. And you can get some information about that or order that magazine at 1333 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. So it's 1333 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, Portland, Oregon. Or you can also go to the web, the internet, and go to www.12-step-review.org. So I'll give it again. www.12-step-review.org.
Thank you.
A lot of that's in is this Morse code?
Sounds like it.
All right, so you can get a hold of this magazine, and we'll start off with a caller from out in television land. Hello?
Hi, Father.
Hi.
Mitch. Hi, I met you last year at Christ the King.
Where? Christ the King where?
In Atlanta.
Oh, great,
yes,
great Paris.
You came and spoke at our Pure Love Festival. Do you remember?
Yes, I sure do. That was wonderful. And so what's your question?
My question is, I'm sort of an amateur historian, and as I review history, I see incidents of suffering, the Holocaust, the African slave trade, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. How do you explain the suffering of so many millions at the hands of a few? And sometimes I'll hear people say, well, Christ suffered, but Christ chose to suffer. How do you explain to someone who disbelieves in God because of what they see in human history and the seeming pointlessness of all the suffering that's happened? And I'll get off the phone and let you answer the question.
Thanks, and y'all have a great time over there in Atlanta. This is Christ the King is the cathedral over in Atlanta, and they have Adoration of the Blessed Sacrament and a great, great youth group over there. So it's nice to hear from y'all. This is a question, in one sense, you know, because your dad was an atheist and posed these kind of questions, even his atheism could be seen as a gift. You know, because you had to confront this kind of issue.
Yeah, I look at it that way because I love growing up. I'm thankful for having grown up with an atheist, listening to all his arguments, because it makes you think.
Yeah.
But then also, however, as I get older, and I did say to him one time, rationally about, I said, Dad, if you contemplate the mechanics of the human finger, what it takes to send a signal up your spine to do this, or the camouflage of a butterfly, Father DeBay has a wonderful book on the evidential power of beauty. He talks about the beauty in creation, all the design. And I said, Dad, you tell me that all this design happened without a designer, by an accident? Then you believe in a miracle far greater than any miracle in the Bible. And that said something to him. You know, he thought about it, you know. But the biggest thing comes with love. I think that's the biggest thing. The saints tell us that the key to true spiritual growth is evangelical love for your enemies. And that's something that people who truly follow Christ have, evangelical love for your enemies. So there's all this terrible suffering in the world because of evil, because man is sinful. And the more we eradicate God from our life, the more the devil takes over. And Jesus says he's a liar and a murderer. The devil produces a culture of death. Jesus came for a culture of life. So all the terrible things that happen in the world are from the influence of evil. And the corrective is to follow Christ. Not to take away the suffering, as we said, because man only gets more evil and more addicted to his security in this world and forgets that he was created to adore God. So the suffering is there. But what people of faith do, which is so miraculous, is to see people with deep faith abide terrible tragedy. The tragedy doesn't defeat them, whether they were in Nagasaki, as Catholics were, but they saw it as something that was able to help purify them. When I entered the seminary 34 years ago, there was a young man that entered called Norman. He was a wonderful young man, and he was 19 years old. But after the novitiate, he thought, this is not my vocation. And he didn't make vows. He went off to college. And at college, he met this wonderful gal. And she liked Norman, but she was dating another man, and she liked both of them. She ended up marrying Norman. And they had four children, and he was a professor. And then when his oldest child was about six and a half, Norman got brain cancer. See, now, God is love, huh? Here's a daily mass goer, and he gets cancer, a young man, his wife needs him. God is love, my father would say. God is love.
And he would say that with a certain cynicism.
Yes, right. So, but Norman's a man of faith. So he went to Lourdes with his wife and stuff. He was not cured. He came home. And then the other man that she had dated in college had not married yet. So Norman had him come over to the house. He got to know his wife, Maureen. He got to know Norman's children. And when Norman passed from this life, his wife eventually married this other man, and they have six children of their own. Six children that would never have existed had Norman not passed away with cancer. So, and I'm sure most people listening tonight would not be here, but some tragedy happened in the past. We have one of our superiors, his grandmother's mother, lost her husband and two children in an earthquake. Two children, her husband, both her children, she only had two children, died in an earthquake. God is love. But she got married again, had one more daughter, who is this superior, this Dominican's grandmother. Now the grandmother, this Dominican, his brothers and sisters, nieces and nephews, his parents, his mother, would never have existed had the earthquake not happened and the first husband died. So he personally could look back and say, oh, happy fault, no pun intended, about the earthquake. Yeah. But, oh, felix culpa.
Yeah. That kind of fault.
Oh, necessary. We say that at the Easter Vigil. Oh, happy fault, oh, necessary sin of Adam that brought us so great a Redeemer. I'm glad Adam and Eve sinned. So he's glad the earthquake happened because he would never exist. So God is so powerful that no matter what the problem, he can bring a greater good out of the problem that would never have existed had the problem not existed. Like with Norman and his cancer. Six children that are alive because Norman, for some reason, get cancer. Now, if only the mafia got cancer or people, then people would serve God not to get cancer. That's not love. That's fair weather friendship, and God is not looking for that. He's looking for human beings who are free agents that can choose freely to love him.
And I think also another problem, I remember having to deal with this in a variety of situations. Sometimes people will blame God when somebody does something like the Holocaust or the slave trade, when God had already forbidden us to enslave people. The church had excommunicated anybody who took part in the slave trade, and murder is in the Ten Commandments. But then God gets blamed because we do what God told us not to do. And we have to be careful about that and taking some of our own responsibility
right.
for our own sins and stop saying, yeah, and God made me do it. No, I chose to do the sins, and unfortunately, other people suffer.
Right.
And then I have to turn to God in the midst of my suffering or their suffering.
Yeah. And you look at the saints and what they do, like when there was a problem, St. Catherine would blame herself. If 9/11 happened in St. Catherine's time, she'd look at, if I were holier, more grace would be mediated. Right, if all of us here were Mother Teresa. Now here's just one Mother Teresa, one woman did all this. Well, if we were all like her, imagine all the great good that would come to mankind.
Yeah.
So instead of people blaming God, they should look, if I were holier, this wouldn't have happened. There'd be more grace mediated to the world because God wants to use me to save the world.
We have a question now from our studio audience. Where are you from?
My name is Robert. Actually, I'm a seminarian at Mount St. Mary's.
Great.
I'm in Philadelphia,
great.
Pennsylvania, originally.
Great. Welcome.
And my question, Father, is if you can go into a little detail or explain St. Paul's comment about how we make up what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ. Actually, I think you're Norman. The story just told about Norman kind of sunk in a little bit, but if you can explain
right.
a little
bit. So Christ further. Came and he suffered and he showed us the way. I am the way. So it's not just his sufferings, that's it, that's complete, no more suffering. No, but he showed us the way, and so we are going to make up for his body, the whole church, in our sufferings. And we're going to participate in his sacrifice and mediate grace to the world through our participation in the sacrificial act of Christ. So in a sense, we're Eucharistic people. We have come to be the Eucharist. When Jesus says, and at Mass we hear the priest says, do this in memory of me, taking the Eucharist. This is my body, this is my blood. Do this in memory of me. Not only the priest to reenact the sacrifice, but you and I participating in the sacrifice to go back out and to live that sacrifice. So when I go to this elderly couple that I was so self-righteously right with and I apologize, I'm dying. I'm giving my life for the salvation of the world. In my own body, I'm participating in the redemptive work of Christ. That sacrifice becomes my sacrifice. Not just his sacrifice, but he incorporates me into his sacrifice for the salvation of the world. So we're continuing the sacrificial, Eucharistic, sacrificial act of Christ by being Eucharistic people.
And that passage, by the way, is Colossians 1:24, where St. Paul even says, now I rejoice in the sufferings on your account, and I fill up what is lacking, the afflictions of Christ, for the sake of his body, which is the church. And so that there's this good that you were talking about before. If I was more of a person who could mediate some of God's grace for the rest of the world could be better.
And to do that, I've got to be willing to suffer. You know, some people think love means you have to be kind to everybody in the sense that you don't cause them any trouble.
Yeah.
But sometimes you have to hurt people, not harm them, but sometimes it hurts to confront people with a serious issue. And if I'm afraid of you, then I've got to suffer that, and I've got to go do it. I die and I grow in the virtue of courage. Now, somebody told me once that courage is not the absence of fear. A young man goes to war, he's afraid.
Mm-hmm.
But courage is fear that has said its prayers. So you say your prayers, and then you go do the right thing and leave the outcome to God. But I've got to be willing to suffer that to redeem the world.
We have another question from here inside the studio. Where are you from?
Hi, my name is Ann, and I'm from Boynton Beach, Florida.
Great.
South
Welcome.
Florida.
Welcome, Ann. And what's your question?
Well, 4 years ago, I had a horrendous automobile accident. And I've been trying to pray and concentrate in every way that I can so that I won't be resentful and so that I will learn to live with my pain and offer it up to God and everything else. In fact, that's one of the reasons why we drove here today. And I was just wondering if you have any helpful hints.
Well, I think, you know, being a person of faith and realizing, okay, this is a broken, sinful world and bad things happen, cancer happens, accidents happen. But our faith then, we can offer it in union with Christ for your family, for the missionaries throughout the world who are undergoing terrible trials. And some, they need your suffering. They need to unite your suffering because your suffering is efficacious. Having faith, being called by Christ to share in his passion, that your suffering is efficacious for the whole world. And so like Mother Teresa's sisters, for example, have their suffering co-workers. They can't come and serve the poor because they're crippled or handicapped, but they offer their sufferings for the sisters throughout the world to work with the poor. They're the suffering servants belonging to Mother Teresa's order. So it's a wonderful, it's a gift. You look at it as a gift. I have a gift. My life now has been totally changed, and it's going in this direction. So I offer myself in union with God. I offer my sufferings for the church. And so you're pumping blood throughout the whole world because of your sufferings.
And I think, too, something that certainly has helped me over the years in dealing with various things is, in one sense, instead of trying too hard to understand why and what this means and what happened, I have to sometimes let go of that kind of question. And I spend time thanking God for the problem. And my focus, again, is on God as a result. And somehow, by not trying so hard to figure it out, but by thanking Him for the problem, it allows Him to act a little more freely in that situation, and then I can end up finding out a little bit more about
why. Mother Teresa liked to say that you're suffering because Jesus is bringing you close to Him on the cross to kiss you. You're getting so close to the cross, to Jesus on the cross, that you're suffering because He kisses you, you know. And then she joked, somebody said to her one time, said, "Well, Mother, please tell Jesus to stop kissing me."
We have another caller ready. Hello?
Hello.
Where are you calling from?
From Locust Grove, Virginia.
Great. And what's your question?
I have a question. One thing I always seem to wonder, life seems to be so unfair. It seems like some people just suffer so much, and other people don't hardly suffer at all. Some people in the world are just looking for a cold drink of water, and other people just seem to have everything. They have great health and intelligence and money, and then there's the other side of people that just getting up in the morning is just a struggle.
Right, and I think people, it's the way you look at it, you know, and some people, you know, if you look at people who have lots of money and are MTV types, and they, you know, have all, and then they get involved in drugs and they're miserable. So, and yet they have all this. So our country's so wealthy, we have more suicides and so forth. And I remember working with Mother Teresa's sisters in Tijuana, and the people love to come down there and work with the people in Tijuana because they're so wonderful, so happy, so many smiles, yet they're so poor. So to think that people in the world, you go to Calcutta, you know, I was in the Home for the Dying one time and with one of Mother Teresa's priests trying to feed this poor man who was shaking, I don't know what from what, but he was shaking. So I had to hold his hands and hold his legs so Father could feed him. And he's feeding him. I didn't know the man knew English. Most poor people don't. They speak Bengali in Calcutta. And we're trying to feed this poor man picked up from the streets, suffering less. And he said, "Oh, thank you. I'm so lucky." I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
He said, "I'm so lucky." Yeah. But here our people have too much and they're miserable. People there have nothing and they're happier. So it does seem unfair that there are some people who have absolutely nothing, but when the reckoning comes, and how much greater will be their joy in heaven because of the suffering they endured in this, that's only God can judge, you know.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about fair and unfair, you know, it seems to be a standard of fairness that I don't always understand. A lot of times I'll say, "Man, I'm tired, I need to get a rest," and people say, "You deserve it." That makes me nervous. If I got what I really deserved, I'd be in big trouble. I don't want what I deserve. And that's why I don't ask for that. I ask for the gifts that I need. And I think to have a sense of the gift of what we have and being able to appreciate that, you know, what a gift it is. And you know, I feel far more blessed. A friend of mine said to me a number of times, "Abuna, I'm so envious of, because you go to work every day and you love what you do. You know, you love your work. You don't know what a joy that is for those of us who have a lot, but we do something we hate doing."
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, so we have to practice gratitude, which I think is an important principle in the spiritual life, to practice gratitude, to be grateful. But also, I think if we look at our culture and we realize what too much attachment to our material welfare does to us, that as Catholics we have to take appropriate action to deny ourselves legitimate things, mm-hmm. lest we become too dependent on them, and then they're taken away, which the devil wants. He can pull that rug right from under your feet, and that's what he wants. So we got to take caution and deny ourselves legitimate things. And
we have another call already. Hello?
Hi.
Hi. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Minnesota.
Great. And what's your question?
Yes. I was wondering, why are we so scared to suffer? I have a thing where I always worry about cancer. I just want to know, how do I change that with God? How do I, you know, realize that I can't change things, but I still am scared to suffer? I'm afraid.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And I think I was maybe not afraid of suffering, but I think growing up with a very insecure background, I always thought, like, I entered religious life, I couldn't believe that they accepted me. It was a time when vocations were low, they needed people, so I got in. And then I thought, but I'm not going to take final vows. I feel something here, it's cancer. And I'm not going, well, it wasn't cancer, I took final vows, but I'm certainly not going to be ordained a priest because it's just too good to be true. I won't be ordained a priest. I've been having these heart problems, things, and I'm going to have a massive heart attack soon. And so I think suffering, we have to be able to come to a point in our life that, and we said fear is the chief activator of our faults, so we're all afraid because we live in a scary world, but God is a God of love, and God always wills what is universally best. So I have to surrender to Him. As Mother Teresa would say, you know, if you have no water in the pump today, to accept that you have no water today. You're put in the street today, you have to live in the street, to accept to be in the street. You're put in the palace today, okay, to accept to be put in the palace. Don't put yourself in the palace, you're there, accept to be in the palace. Yeah. And then you do what God wants you in that situation. And then she says you're free. So, you know, we have to take each day as it comes and surrender it to God. And we have fears, but it's not wrong to have fears. Yeah. And a lot of people, especially from very dysfunctional families, have a lot of irrational fears. And I heard a person say that one time, she was a 12-step person, that people have a lot of irrational fears. I didn't think that I did. And I heard her say that, and I always deny it when people say things, because I have no problems. And then I had to borrow this car that belonged to a very powerful priest. He was the vice president in charge of the universe. Very powerful.
University.
No, universe.
The universe.
Very powerful priest. Can't get more powerful than that. And I had to borrow his car, and I thought, I've never been in a car accident in my life, but today. And so I get in the car, and now I'm afraid. And fear is the chief activator of our faults. And I got in the car, and it was a bright, sunny California day, and I thought, well, I better put on my sunglasses. And the thought flashed through my mind, if I put on my sunglasses, I'm going to be in a car accident. Now, that's an irrational fear, a phobia, and I never recognized it until I heard this woman say it. I thought, I have a lot of irrational fears. But I trust in God. I put on my sunglasses. If He wants a car accident, good. Welcome to me the heritage that comes to me, says one of the Psalms. Welcome indeed the heritage that comes to me. I accept it, but I get on my way. I'm not going to allow my fears to make my choices for me. So you have to work through those fears and not give in to them.
And, you know, I think, too, we sometimes forget that pain is necessary for our survival. If we don't have pain, we'll die because we don't have pain. For instance, infants feel the pain of hunger. If they don't feel that pain, they won't cry. And if they don't cry, we don't know we need to feed them. And it's true, if we get hurt, we feel the pain, but without feeling that pain, we won't know that we're bleeding or hurt or sick, and we would die. And so we have to remember that that's another element of
It's a good way to look at it. Maybe there's spiritual pain we don't realize, and that means we need God, and I need to do something with my spiritual life because there's such pain and anxiety in my life, and I need to learn to trust in God.
That restlessness that St. Augustine describes, our hearts are restless till they rest in thee. If I don't have that restlessness, I won't know that there's more.
Right.
The infinite love of God is out there because I desire it. I'm made for it.
I think that's why Jesus is the bread of life. He gives us the Eucharist. You can't see Him, as St. Thomas says in the Tantum Ergo, what our senses fail to fathom, faith alone perceives, that He's the bread of life. He's the only one that can truly satiate all our desires. And I tell young people at First Communion, you know, you hear a song, you like that song, I've got to have that CD, I'm going to buy that CD, then I can listen whenever I want. I love that song. They listen, 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 and they get tired of it, and they put it with the 300 million CDs that are already over there.
Yeah.
until they get another one. Well, how many CDs can satisfy you? We were made for God who is infinite.
Yeah. And you're just not going to be satisfied with less. So it's changing our attitude to accept the things that are and not blame the things out there. And that's a pretty good message that you've got there for us. For you to get some more information from Father Emmerich, again, want to remind you that he's the editor of the 12-Step Review. And you can get that if you write to 1333 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. And that's in Portland, Oregon. Or you can go to the internet and you can go to www.12-step-review.org, and you can find out about that magazine and take a look at some more of the wisdom that Father has. Father, I appreciate
Thank you
coming here. It's been great, and we're glad that all of you were able to watch. Again, we want to make sure that you all remember us between the electric bill and gas bill, because you bring us to you. And Father, Volt, and the other great guests that we have here are here because you make it possible. So please be generous and help support this network. And if you would join me in giving a blessing to everybody, mm-hmm. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May cause His face to shine upon you. May He direct you in all your ways and lead you by His peace. And I bless you in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Amen. Go out there with a lot of courage. Don't let your fears overcome you, but overcome those fears by the grace of God. And find that different way in which God is going to use you to serve Him in whatever circumstance you're in. Thank you, and God bless.